Scott Spears along with you here, and it is now time for the Pastor Spot here on WWGH Radio. Now remember, the Pastor Spot is a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship, and what a pleasure it is and has been over these last 3 weeks to be joined by the pastor of Community Christian Fellowship, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor Whitaker, how are you?
I'm doing great, Scott. Good to have you this morning on here with me. I've just been doing great. I kind of feel out of the loop, though. I see all your posts on the station page, I'm just not up there. You know, we're doing this remote, and I just kind of feel really out of the loop sometimes. But let everybody know that I'm still alive and well out there, will you?
I do, and they're glad. You know, one of the great things about technology is that we all can stay in touch by telephone, and even the people who haven't been coming in, Terry has not been in for a few weeks, and these people who are calling in, it's great to catch up with them on the telephone during this time.
You know, I'd love to come in, but I'll be honest with you. I'm trying to kind of be careful about where I go. My kids have been going to the grocery store for me, and for Shirley and I, and they just would rather. We have such a large family, and once it starts through it, I mean, it could be. And there's extended members of those families, you know, that are old, some of them are older and have health issues, and we're just all trying to really be careful. I know that last night we had a deacons and elders meeting, and people think, well, how could you do that? Well, what you do is you take a very large room, and you take six guys, and you put them 10 feet apart. that's about the way you do it, and it's the only way to do it, you know. But those kind of meetings are what everyone should be doing if they need to have a meeting and can't do, you know, a conference call or something like that. But, you know, I think that we need to, I love to see the things on the news and the posts of people doing the drive-by and waving at people. Last night on the news, a little boy had a drive-by birthday party, and he was just so excited as people drove by and waved and yelled and threw candy out of the car. And, you know, there's things we can do. But we still remember we have to have, as people, we have to have that social and personal contact. You know, it's very important. We need it. It alleviates depression. And while we can't meet in the church, we haven't met here now is it 3 weeks, I think? We haven't really met here at the church. And I've been doing a live feed on Community Christian Fellowship. It's a blessing to be able to do that. You know, if we didn't have social media, where would we be? You know, it's kind of interesting, Scott. Something I want to talk about this morning. I'm starting to see a lot of things out there. I made a post yesterday that I found interesting. I said, I'm noticing some odd things. A lot of people are getting in this time of isolation and this time of being off by ourselves. Some people are getting seem more nice, and other people seem to be more nasty. And I thought about that. Why is that? Some people just are really getting kind of nasty, and other people are just getting nicer as the day goes by. And I said that, and a friend of mine commented back. He said because their true nature is coming out. But I don't know. I guess there's some truth to that. But I have noticed that. We're starting to see a lot more of the conspiracy things come out with people thinking, oh, it's this or it's that. And, you know, I really like to challenge people just to sit back and breathe and let this thing ride out. First of all, you know, people are saying, you know, this is worldwide and widespread as far as everyone staying home, and what does that mean? Well, think about something. Have we ever had a pandemic that everyone in the world can communicate as fast as they can now? Of course not. And because of us being able to do that, the whole world seeing what works, and they're implementing it where they are. It's no great conspiracy. It's just a fact. Let's stay home and make sense out of this thing. You know, for people that think this isn't real, I've got a neighbor a mile down the road that is on a vent right now because of this virus. And you tell that family that this is a conspiracy and it's not real. because I'm talking with them on a daily basis over the phone and praying with them. And it's real. Because a week ago, their mother was good as gold and fine and dandy. You know what I mean? And so it's something that, you know, I really want to caution people from getting cynical with this. Does that make sense to you, Scott?
Well, it does. And you know, these conspiracy theories have been there since the start of this. And I am really surprised at the people who I run into on a daily basis, who I consider to be perfectly normal, upstanding, good citizens who still believe that to this day.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised, to be honest with you, too, about some of the people that I respect, at maybe even some colleagues that are chasing this rabbit. Now, you know, a lot of it, you know, let me make something clear. I firmly believe that our Lord Jesus Christ is going to return. And I believe there will be end times. I believe in that whole. I know that as I read Scripture, I know that to be true. But the point is, every time we have something pop up, why in the world do people always jump to that conclusion, no matter what major catastrophe it is? And that's all they want to go on and on about. It's like, it's just kind of weird because, you know, the Bible tells us that, yes, that day will come. Be no one will know when it is. See that we are to look and see the times, and all the times are getting short. They've been getting short since the ascension over 2,000 years ago. But here's the bottom line: the Bible tells us to be diligent in doing what we're supposed to do every day, in reaching people, in sharing Christ, in putting our others first, in loving people. In other words, what we're supposed to do if we truly believe this is going to happen. We're not supposed to be out there yelling, the sky is falling. We're supposed to be out there telling people that we have a loving God and Savior that loves them dearly and wants to save them and give them a new life and a better life even here on earth as they walk and live for Him. So I don't have a lot of room for these people that are trying to throw all this stuff out there and using numerology and all these different things. Let it go. I mean, you know, go buy a book, go buy a magazine somewhere, a detective magazine, and bury yourself in that. Do I sound wrong?
No, and you know, and this was a post that I put up last night. It was a rather long post, but what I have finally decided is that during this thing, people are scared, people are worried, people are apprehensive, and the point is, pay attention to the doctors, pay attention to what they say, be smart, be proactive when it comes to this, but also understand that much like any other crisis that we have or have ever had in the human race, sometimes I even hate to just say America because this is going on all over the world right now, that as human beings, this is what we do. People live, people die, people get sick, people have bad days, people go through other diseases, and we're smart about it, we deal with it, we get through it, and we'll come out on the other side. Now be smart, wash your hands, stay 6 feet apart, if you're elderly, don't go out, do what they say, but there's got to be a happy medium where we can do that, and also not go off our rocker and say, oh, well, it's all fake.
Mm-hmm. I've got it. I want to read something to you that a lady I know posted this morning, and I had to copy it. It was just, listen to this, it's really great. And she posted it from, I don't know where it came from, but anyway. Says, Ohio schools have been out for over 4 weeks, and if we go back May 1st, we will be out for over 7 weeks. If they cancel the rest of the school year, students will miss 2.5 months of education. Many people are concerned about students falling behind because of this. Yes, they may fall behind when it comes to classroom education, but what if instead of falling behind, this group of kids are advanced because of this? Hear me out. What if they have more empathy, they enjoy family connection, they can be more creative and entertain themselves, they love to read, they love to express themselves in writing? What if they enjoy the simple things like their own backyard, and sitting near a window in the quiet, What if they notice the birds and the dates the different flowers emerge and the calming renewal of a gentle shower? What if this generation are the ones to learn to cook, organize their space, do their laundry, and keep a well-run home? What if they learn to stretch a dollar and to live with less? What if they learn to plan shopping trips and meals at home? What if they learn the value of eating together as a family and finding the good to share in the small delights of every day? What if they are the ones to place great value on our teachers and educational professionals, librarians, public servants, and the previously invisible essential support workers like truck drivers, grocers, cashiers, custodians, logistics and healthcare workers, and their supporting staff, just to name a few of the millions taking care of us right now while we are sheltered in place? What if these children, what if among these great children, a great leader emerges who had the benefit of a slower pace and a simpler life to truly learn what really matters? What if they are ahead? Isn't that neat?
It really is. And, you know, maybe that'll be the case.
I pray that when things slow down, that a lot of people have had this time to reevaluate. You know, there's two ways. some people in the religious realm are looking at this as a great judgment by God, or they're looking at it like we're right there at the end. Now I don't know. I don't know where we're at, but I do know this, that my God, the God I worship, always takes what we break and makes something good out of it. And when I look at this, you know, I'll be honest with you, I have been praying for a long time, and I didn't know what the answer was. And in my prayers, I would say, Lord, please, do something to give this nation a reset. Let them think. We're spiraling out of control with our devaluation of our family home, our family ties, our family connections, our going to church, our values. Everything is just really racing out of control. And a lot of people say, well, I don't believe that. I think we're progressing. Well, if you look at the crime rate, the suicides, look at the human sex trafficking, all these things. We're in trouble as a world, and we have been. And what if, because of this pandemic, God says, you know what, I'm going to give you people an opportunity to maybe to hit the reset button a little bit and think about the values and what are important. See, God takes bad and he makes it good. And I think many times that Christian leaders should be talking about that. Now's the time to turn to God and trust him with our lives, and that things will be better. Not a time to try to scare the world into fire and brimstone. And you know, I truly believe in every word of Scripture and what it says. But we have a God. You know, Jesus said that he came here to save the world, not to condemn the world. And we have a saving God. And I don't understand people that always have the attitude of, you're going to get yours. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, and one thing this has really made me think about the last two nights is there has been a change in society over the last few years, but I also think what this has done in a weird way is put into perspective who is important in your life. Because I think a lot of people are in your life, I came to this conclusion about a month ago, that a lot of people are in your life because they want something. Now, I hate to say that, but that's what I started to notice, is people were there because they want something. But the people who are here during this particular mess, and the people who you feel better being around during this particular mess, and I'm not even talking about your best friends or even your family in some cases. They make you feel better. You can laugh with them. You can take your mind off of this for a minute.
Absolutely.
You learn who those people are.
And you learn that there's people that come to your house and bring you things to help you without any motives behind it.
That's right. And really, it sorts it all out. Now, some people, on the flip side, though, I have noticed this. This is also happening. With every good, I guess there's a little bit of bad, is that some people now are being barraged by people who do have not so nice motives because they just have more time on their hands because they're not doing anything.
Isn't that horrible?
Isn't it awful? Yeah.
It really is. There's people that are, the scam artists are still out there. And, you know, in this particular time, not that they shouldn't be prosecuted all the time, but if they're caught, I hope they throw the book at them. And not because I want revenge, because that's just plain so deep and evil.
Well,
Go ahead.
Well, I've even noticed that it personal friendships and personal relationships, you know, people work. They work 40 hours a week, sometimes more. But when you take that away, I think boredom is leaving them to be maybe more gracious and a little nicer than they would be. More attentive, maybe, is the word.
Maybe they're glad to see you and hear you, Scott.
Maybe they are. Who knows?
No, I mean, what I mean by that. Yeah, but what I say it is that, you know, people, the boredom is like, ah, look, there's someone out there. You know, I know when my wife and I hear something in the driveway, we look out real quick, which one of the kids is it? And, you know, they're not coming in to see us. They're just out there to pull in and wave. And, boy, 3 months ago, would we have done that? Well, of course not.
No.
You know, it's interesting that I've been doing a live feed on Sunday morning. And we have about a total of 5 to 6 people that come in. And one's up in the sound booth. And then we have Holly leading music. And then we have like 3 other people strategically around, which is no one's in contact with each other. But you know, it would appear from me preaching from the pulpit that we probably have a regular group of people there. Because for me, I told them, I said, one reason I like you here is very hard to teach to thin air and preach to thin air. And it's nice to have those people on different sides of the church to look at why you're preaching. It's much easier. But we're doing it in a very safe manner. But anyway, what I was getting at was by doing the live feed, I find it interesting that prior to this, if I would do it, I'd get some people viewing it. And I get a couple comments here or there. But now, because people are at home, and people are concerned about what's going on, and I had in Sunday, between what I shared and then other people sharing the post, I had upwards of close to 500 people watching. Now, it doesn't mean they watched the whole time. But I had that many people watching, and I had just loads of comments and encouragement. And I've been getting the site, Community Christian Fellowship, is just getting bombarded with people, you know, joining the page. And you know, that wouldn't happen if this didn't happen. And I think that people are looking for. What I'm saying is, there's a bright spot in this stuff if you're willing to look for it and see it. You know what I mean? You know, there's, you know, God redeems, but we need to trust him and look for him to show us those redeeming factors in difficult times. And to me, that's a huge redeeming factor. You know, Scott, I'll tell you something interesting, and please, I'm not a money man. You know me by now that way. I don't preach on money. If I have to once in a blue moon, I literally apologize for it. I just don't like to talk about money. But anyway, our congregation, they have not missed a beat in their giving to the church since this started. And I remember early on seeing some posts from different pastors out there saying, now don't forget, you know, the church still has to be supported, and we want to get your tithes and offerings. And I abstained from any of that because I knew that our congregation would do what the Lord laid on their heart to do. And I just did not want to do that at all. And our people have been so gracious. A matter of fact, because of the amount of outreach with food that we're doing to shut-ins and people that need meals, we have been getting several people outside of the church sending money and asking how they can help. And we have had a lot of monetary donations to help with that stuff. And so to me, you know, that's a huge blessing. That's a praise. that I see that going on. And it's kind of an affirmation of what we're doing, that, you know, those things are happening. And, you know, so many little things people are doing. I'll tell you something really neat that a fellow in the church did, just on his own. He and his wife, they ordered a 1,000 of these little tiny wooden crosses that like have a keychain thing on them. They would go on like a keychain or something. And they wrote encouraging notes on them, real small with Sharpies. And they hung them all around the church and the mission house. And they're starting to hang them around town just for people to find them and pick them up. Now that seems like something. That doesn't seem like much, does it? But what if you're the person that picks that up and you're really bummed, really depressed, and you turn around and you read something on the back that is a reminder that God's with you, or you know, it'll be okay. You see what I mean? There's all kinds of little things people can do that are wonderful things to do. And I just think we not have to continue doing them. It's so hard in many, you know, families another way, and families are having such a difficult time right now, is, you know, last Friday I did my sister-in-law's funeral, and Phyllis's funeral. It was very difficult, very odd. I mean, we had a tent out by the road of the cemetery. I was the only one under the tent. Everyone else was in family groups spread apart by 10 feet. And that was just odd to me. But still, we were able to come together, and everyone knew they loved one another, and they've kept in touch, you know, over social media since the funeral. And we're just experiencing, we are a very resilient, God made a very resilient person when he created man. And we figure out ways to do things when we can't do things. And that is the reason that we have progressed as a nation and as a people so much. You know, when we get adversity, we rise up to it. And this is definitely adversity. And I see people rising up to it. I've made new friends that I can't even shake their hand. How isn't that kind of weird, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And I've also found out there's some pretty bitter people that are out there that when we're able to have contact again, I need to go pay a visit to and try and ask them, why are you so bitter? You know what I mean? Not just so that I can say, hey, you know, I don't like to see people that live in negativity. I don't like to see people, their lives are so bad that they've always got to look at the downside of everything. I want people to enjoy life. We were created to enjoy life. You know, God created us with a purpose, not to be always disappointed, always downtrodden. Let me tell you something a friend of mine's doing real quick. Jeff Youngs has a bicycle shop, but what he does is he rebuilds high-end road bikes, like racing bikes, those kind of bikes, you know, just high-end stuff, high-end mountain bikes. When I say high-end, you know how expensive that stuff can get. Guy told me one day he paid $4,500 for a bike, and I about fell over. But anyway, Jeff's getting those and reconditioning them and reselling them to people, which is a great business, right? Well, he also contacted me. He says, you know, Steve, I get a lot of low-end bikes, and people donate bikes to me all the time. He said, would you mind being my outlet to help people with low-end bikes? So kids and people that need bikes can have a bike when maybe they can't afford it. And I said, you know, what a wonderful thing. I'll talk to the guys at church and see if we can do that, because that's great. I mean, to be able to get a bike to a kid that doesn't have one, or a person that can't afford gas. I mean, some of these bikes, I mean, the bikes he's given people are not junk at all. And, you know, some of them are really nice bikes. And that's the kind of thing that's coming out of this. Now, he did all this since the pandemic. He came up with this thought process. And this is a businessman that is about to, in his normal daily business, probably come into some hard times. You know, he owns Mid-Ohio Insurance Solutions, and they're going to get into this month with the people that aren't making their premiums. You know what I mean? But still, he's finding a way to go out and do something positive in the community. I think that's just, you know, such a blessing to be able to see that.
And I think those are the good stories that are going to come out of this very positively, and we're going to say, boy, that was great. That was a shining example of how people handled that situation really well. And, you know, it's hard to tell. What's interesting to me is I knew a lot of anxious people before this who were anxious about paying their bills, anxious about their own lives, what kind of track they were on, what was going on. I don't know if this has made that better or worse. It's a weird thing because in some ways it stopped the world and a lot of them are no longer working. So those financial problems have stopped because, you know, a lot of people are no longer paying their utility bills or they don't have the money and the utility companies are not been out of shape about it at this point. But I don't know personally, internally, if it changes that person. I hope it does.
I don't think so.
Yeah,
think
probably
so.
Not.
I think one thing that it does do, I think that the person that is, I hate to use the term our best and brightest, but what I mean by that, the people that are going to seek to do what's right, they're going to seek to achieve all the time. They're going to seek to make things happen. I think that what this is going to do, a lot of them have been running around in a rat race, doing too much. I think it's going to allow a lot of them to sit back and reevaluate what made sense and what didn't, and refocus. But the negativity, the world, you know, everything's bad, you know. I got a black mark against me. I think that is the way that is. And people have often said this, and I know this is probably a more of a capitalist would say this, I suppose. But they always say that if you took all the world's money and distributed it evenly, in 20 years you'd have the exact same breakdown of who had it and who didn't. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about a little bit. There are going to be those people that are going to stay negative, and it's too bad. There's going to be other people, though, that it feels good to be kind of like everybody else because they don't have anything, none of their own doing. And, you know, I find that a lot of those people are the ones doing sharing of what they have. And there's good people out there that are poor financially. There's real good people that are poor financially. I had the blessing of growing up without anything, and that seems weird to say the blessing, but trust me, it was a blessing. I grew up without anything, but I grew up with parents that said, you can do anything you want, and I never knew I was poor. I never knew that I didn't have any money financially. My dad had a blue-collar job and, you know, was subject to layoffs, and we had five kids in the house, and it's just quite. And my dad, on top of it, had a bit of a gambling problem, so that really put us, you know, backed up against the wall. But you know, you can be poor and be positive, and you can also be poor and feel like, well, this is the lot that I'm in. I can never get out of it, so why try? My siblings have all been, for the most part, relatively productive, very successful people. And it's because of that positive attitude that needed to be there. And I will also say this. The main reason is that I believe is that all of them have surrendered their life to Christ and they trust the Lord every day. And that's one of the things that keeps them from getting negative and downtrodden. They know that at the end of the day, God still loves them each and every day. And there's no reason to do that wowsy, woo-woo stuff, you know, that you see out there all the time. And I think this is going to be a good time when we get through it. I pray that it doesn't get overly politicized. I've already seen that stuff, this stuff in the working. And for crying out loud, we got to let that go. I mean, this nation for so many years, in times of crisis, rallied behind their leaders. And I mean from both parties, they rallied behind their leaders. And this divisive stuff is making me ill when I see it, and I just don't want to. I'm not going to talk about it with people. I'm not going to fuel the fire, so to speak. And I think that, like I said, I think that with everything going on, that God has given us a marvelous opportunity to sit back and say, okay, America, you know, I made you a great nation. Excuse me. I made you a great nation, and you've begun to squander it. Now I'm giving you a chance to rethink and get back on track again. Because every economist out there, I don't care what their political persuasion was, has said for years that, you know, our lifestyle in this country is a runaway train. And you cannot be satisfied by constantly needing to buy and spend and buy and spend and make yourself feel good. And I remember when I was a child, the people that had the really, really good jobs had houses now that we call starter houses. Nowadays, I mean, these kids are, you know, 26, 27 years old. If they're not living in a five-bedroom, beautiful home, you know, once they get out of college and have two brand-new cars and all these things that we used to work for and hope we achieved by the time you were 45, they feel like they're a failure. And, you know, that's just, that's an excess that I just don't think that we've ever needed. I don't think it's been good for anyone. It puts the wrong expectations on children of what things are supposed to be like. And then, you know, when they can't achieve that, and they feel like a failure. And once you feel like a failure, it's hard to get up again. And hence, what you end up with is kids living with mom and dad. And kids that just can't seem to get it going. And I think as society, we've done a lot to that. We have a lot to look at ourselves in the mirror over that one. But, you know, I just think that this is a time that, you know, get out there and plant those gardens, folks. You know, right now, everyone needs to be buying stock in Miracle-Gro. When you get that stimulus money, buy some stock in Miracle-Gro, in the place that makes peat pots, garden soil, shovels, hose rakes, because there's a lot of people that are saying, man, I'm putting a garden out. I don't want to fight this grocery store thing forever. And everybody for years was throwing their canning jars away. Man, those things just became gold. I mean, they really did. Everyone I talk to is you know, talking about what they're going to put up. Dehydrators. Yeah, get stock in a dehydrator company that makes those little home dehydrators. But don't you see that happening?
I do. It's an interesting thing because I think people, because of the lack of seeing this coming from a great distance, it came up on people, and they didn't have a chance to plan, and now I think they wish they would have, and I think when it's over, they will. And one of my biggest questions is not even necessarily on the food end, and it's hard to think about this because we are in the middle of it right now, but when this is over, what are people going to do? Are they going to go back to the way they were? Are they going to regret some of the ways they handled things? And I'm speaking more much like you. I think the people who have changed for the good, like in the post you read this morning, I think they'll be fine, and I think that'll take care of itself. But the people who used this as a time to pause their life, not change it, pause it, it will come to an end. And then, what? Are you back to the same mess you were in mid-March? I don't know. And it could be a bigger mess at that point.
Yeah, it could be, because things are going to be put off. You know, but, and there's also companies that are, you know, one that really goes right through me. You know, my kids are dairy farmers. And they're dumping milk all over the place, dumping milk in Ohio by the millions of gallons. The stores have used this crisis, the Walmart particularly, has used this crisis to, you notice you go in and say, limit 1 gallon of milk. There is no shortage on milk. They are dumping it by the thousands of gallons. But here's what's happening. By doing this, they're forcing the small farmers out. And that way, when this is over with, and if small farmers are just, they're dying, and they're going to be able to have more of a control of the market price when it's all over with. What a crime. that these large corporations are doing this to people. I mean, people don't realize what's going on with this. And there is no milk shortage. They need to demand these stores stop this stuff. They're doing it at a whole marketing game. My daughter and her husband got a letter from some people that we know here in town that were just break their heart broken. Their milk company said, "We're done. We're not picking up your milk anymore. We can't." It's a marketing game. It's just a huge, huge shame that this kind of stuff goes on. And a year or so ago, Walmart built a giant milk plant and made the decision. You know, they advertise local this, local that. Well, they made a decision that they were only going to pick up from farms that could fill a tanker. Well, a tanker holds 5 to 6,000 gallons of milk. Now, in order to have a farm that will produce 5 to 6,000 gallons of milk once or twice a day or more, you better be a huge, huge corporate dairy. In a corporate dairy, most of the people being hired are paid next to nothing to milk the cows. I'll be honest with you, most of the time they're migrant workers, and a lot of them are undocumented. And that's, once again, how they can pay them what they do. And the other thing is, when you're a family farmer, old Bessie there is your livelihood. You know, you take care of that cow. You nurture her. When you're in a corporate dairy, those cows are just numbers and they're expendable. And those guys that are milking them every day, they don't care about that cow. You know, that cow's got an injury. They're not going to say anything. That cow's, you know, you're not getting the quality of milk. But this is what happens when we let the world run away with craziness. And everything's about the almighty dollar. And I think that's another issue that has pulled us way back and made us think again. The value of that dollar, what are we doing with it? I pray that family farms can make it through this, but they're really taking a real beating. And it's the corporate giants, you know, it's the Walmarts that are doing it. And Walmart is not your family-friendly store that it was when Sam Walton had it. And it breaks my heart to see what they're doing to the people that have supplied them for so many years. And, you know, everything right now, my kids are in a co-op, and because of a co-op, they're able to move milk around, and they're still picking their milk up. But all the guys that had independent contracts, they're dropping them right and left. And it's just, well, what a sad deal it is. But, you know, look into that stuff. Don't believe what I say. Look it up. Get online. But it really is going on out there, but I think that all in all, people are looking at, they're looking at the value of a dollar and what it means to go to the store. Right now, there's a lot of broke people, I'll tell you that. A couple weeks ago, people were still getting paychecks filtering in, but those people that lived week to week and month to month, they're out of money now. And we're starting to hear from them on a regular basis now here at the church. You know, this and that family is completely out of food, and they have no money. And you try to do what we can, and a lot of people are trying to help, but there are people that have a real need. Well, when you're completely out of money, you start thinking about, wow, you know, why did I spend this? Why did I spend that? I heard last week that the lottery commission was in trouble because didn't know that they were going to bring enough in to meet their minimum. And my response to that is hallelujah. Our state has been, I think that it is one of the worst forms of treating the disadvantaged poorly. When you target those people to spend their money on something to bolster a program that you could find another way to do. First of all, look at this a minute. The money goes to education, right? I promise you, in our poor inner city communities, those are not the kids that they're reaching out and education. Those kids' families, because they feel they don't have any hope, and they could just hit, maybe I'll hit the lottery. I watch them, you watch them, Scott. You go into the gas stations, and these people, bless their hearts, man, you know, they're deluded. They go in, and they're just dumping half their money down on lottery tickets. And the state's just pulling all the money in and talking about the great things they're doing with education. Really? How about if that was, you know, how about that you take some of that money and get into the communities and do more mentoring and tutoring and those kind of things, rather than building stadiums and new air-conditioned this and carpeted this and a la carte kitchens. And for crying out loud, I had a great education, and I sweat my buns off in the fall, and I sweat my buns off in the spring. And hopefully there was a breeze blowing when they opened that window. And we had hardwood floors and hard desks, and our lunch was what it was. And you see where I'm at?
I think it's interesting to see how it's all trickled down, even to some things that it need to trickle down to, and that's going to be a good thing.
I think so. I pray that some of those people realize, you know what? I spent $20,000 over the last 5 years on a lottery that I never got more than $300, $400 back from. Maybe I shouldn't do that anymore. And I am not a supporter of our lottery system, and shame on our state for doing it. And I feel the same way about legalized gambling. I've seen what it's done. I grew up with a father that was an addicted gambler, and I saw what it did. You know what I mean? And I always said the horse's shoes came before ours. And my dad was a wonderful man. I loved him dearly, but, man, he had a bug. His dad did. I mean, he was raised gambling at the dog tracks with his dad. And, you know, I see what it does to people. It's another – look what it's done to poor Art Schleister. Destroyed that man.
Yep.
And he still can't shake it. But all these things that we've wasted our money on and made to look glamorous with all the glitz and bubbles and blasts and, you know – people are sitting at home thinking, wow, did I really need that? And I pray that there's a huge reset there. I truly do. I know that God loves us, and he's there for us. And I hope that more people can find faith and understand that they don't have to be alone in this, even if they're alone at home. And before I get off here, I do want to encourage people, please reach out to your seniors. They're going to be scared. They're not going to let you in their house. They probably don't want to go in their house. You don't. But if you could stop and knock at a door, maybe wave through a window and leave them something on the front porch, maybe some food. How about some magazines or something to read or whatever the case may be? That's just a huge blessing to those people, and they really need it.
Absolutely.
And our kids today, remember, our kids out there, this is new to them, too, and this is difficult. Take their minds off stuff. Dad, get out there, or brother or uncle or somebody, get out there in the yard and throw some ball around. Mom, sit down and teach your kids how to sew a button on a shirt, something new they might find really cool, you know. One thing I really like that's been going on is online. There's all kinds of crafts you can do. There's National Geographic has stuff. I mean, if you look, it's just a Nikon was doing a free beginner camera course online that didn't cost anything. You can go on Nikon and take this online course to learn about photography. There's all these things you can do, and I really encourage people to do it. I know that I'm a pastor, and I should be ashamed of myself for not talking about the Easter weekend. We're going to be doing a drive-in service, which is nice. Everyone has to stay in the car. But you know, at least we can see each other, right?
That's right. We do what we can in these times.
We're doing it at the park. We've got the park, the Prospect Park Commission gave us the okay to do that as long as we stayed in our cars, didn't use bathroom, do that kind of stuff, you know, and stayed on the parking lot, which I think is great. But I'll be giving an Easter message Sunday at 10:30 in the morning at Prospect Park. But, you know, Jesus Christ rose again. I know that from the bottom of my heart. And he is there to love us, to guide us, and give us new life. But we have to be willing to say, you know what, I believe it. And I'm gonna close with this interesting fact. if you took the prophecies, this is actually a scientific fact. If you took all the prophecies, which you can find in the Bible, in the Old Testament, if you took all those prophecies and that came true and were accurate in the New Testament in what happened, if you took all those, the odds of that happening, and I don't remember the number, but it's in the quadruple trillions, it would be like taking silver dollars 4 feet deep across the state of Texas and going out and picking up one random coin and it being the right one. Now, that's astronomical odds. But they've actually calculated the Old Testament things that they know were prophesied because they were written, and in the New Testament, things they've actually know actually happened because, and they're even historical events. How people can be so bold to not believe in God and believe in our Bible is beyond me. And I find there is great hope in it. There's great promise in it. And the truths of Scripture are amazing, and they carry me through each and every day. And I know they can carry you through, too. Hey, if anybody wants to call me or needs to, I'm at 740-494-2222 is the church. We're also at prospectccf.com. If you go on Facebook, you can, I try to post a copy of this on the pastor spot. You can listen to it again tonight. You can listen to it now and again tomorrow at 3:15 and then Sunday morning between 8 and 9. And you can also reach us at Community Christian Fellowship on Facebook and or the pastor spot. And I look forward to being back next week. Scott, you have a wonderful Easter. It's always great being with you. And I look forward to a lot more of this.
Absolutely. Happy Easter, Pastor.
Thank you, buddy.
Bye-bye.